Even David is tall. Here we go. So lovely to be with you, always. I'm honored to share in this time. Thanks, Max and Ruth. Are there any Ruths here? Is there any just the two of us? It is rare. It's rare to have two Ruths. I think we might need a ritual about when that happens. Wait, there's one more. Three Ruths? This could be a really important day for my heart. Thank you. Thanks. And I love your music. Thank you so much. And David, oh, there you are. That was just beautiful, perfect opening to think about ritual and where we're going. So thank you all. So I've been following your talks about ritual. I usually can't make it here. I live an hour south, but I've listened, Brad, to every one of them. Oh, I shouldn't point my finger at him either, because he's doing a really good job. However, there is no PowerPoint today. I can't quite follow all of that, but I did bring a visual aid just to give you a little heads up. So hopefully you've been really thinking about ritual and exploring what that might mean for you and what you bump up against and what it means personally and corporately and where those places are, as Brad pointed out, that we're bereft of ritual. So hopefully we're just going to keep going a little and maybe kind of move into almost what David was talking about. How can we incorporate it? What might be some things that you could try to be able to expand your sense of ritual? So I'm just so delighted to be here. I'm going to start with a story. My friend Pat Denner recently told me this story about a hummingbird. In her garage, she has a little pull down on her garage door for when the power's not working, and the little pull down has a little red ball on it. And what happened was a hummingbird saw that red thing and went into her garage and was trying to obviously feed on the little red ball, and there's nothing there. And then the hummingbird didn't seem able to get out of the garage. So my friend Pat took a broom and thought she'd just sort of gracefully encourage it, right? Like, it's by that little red thing, just kind of encourage it. Well, hummingbirds, when their little fright flight thing happens, they go up. So every time she'd try, it would just go further up into the garage. So my friend Pat, I mean, poor Pat, she did the only thing she could do. She Googled, how do you get rid of a hummingbird in your garage? And sure enough, the answer is there. And it's to take something red, put it on the ground, and the hummingbird will eventually see it and come down and then be able to see a way out. So sometimes with ritual, we get caught up in the garage. We have old ways of doing things or old ways we've been accustomed to. And we need something that helps redirect us so that we don't just get stuck up in the top of the garage. So that's our goal for today. Sometimes we need that whole new perspective. Now, on the Peruvian medicine path that I'm trained on, hummingbirds happen to be one of the primary guides that teaches us as we learn the medicine path. So I'm going to be coming back to the hummingbird all day. I'm not going to keep here all day, for this next bit of time, with some lessons that the hummingbird has for us. So almost all indigenous traditions draw on the winged ones or the four-leggeds to help guide them. They usually set them around them as directional guides or things you can listen to when you're feeling stuck, and they tend to teach us those things. So most indigenous cultures will choose something from their area, like it might be a bear that sits in the north, or it might be a bison in the south, or maybe it's a hawk in the east. So they set sacred directions and animals or winged ones to guide it. So the hummingbird just happens to be one of those, and it helps to instruct us, keep us safe and protected. So I think you probably know, if you've ever heard me talk before, that I love ritual. I mean, I love ritual. And the reason I love ritual is because I believe it to be heart-opening. I believe it to be a place where we can expand and breathe a little deeper or explore something else. But I will also admit to you, I didn't always love the word ritual. I didn't. It had some kind of baggage attached to it when I'd think about ritual. And it took me quite a while to sort that out, but I think ritual for me was always associated with something that maybe witches did, like they had little rituals, and I was like, I wasn't sure about that. And then I also can admit to you that I wasn't always really keen on the whole idea of animals guiding us. It just seemed a little strange to me. So for me, those things became part of what I had to redirect my attention to, redefine, because it was holding me up in the top of the garage. I would gather a circle of people and I'd say, let's have a spring equinox gathering. Or and eventually kind of a, let's do a summer ceremony. But now I've really reclaimed that word ritual. I think it's really important that we have these ritualized times together to explore. So as I've reclaimed that word, I've followed the red to something new. There's a shaman from Ecuador who I've had the chance to meet and learn from, Don Alberto Taxo. And if I had a PowerPoint, you'd be seeing it up there, but I don't. He talks about how we need to create these small habits of connection with everything around us, that we do it bit by bit, awareness by awareness. We step out of this awkwardness we might feel thinking about ritual or making new rituals. We step out of it and we simply expand our heart toward the natural world. We follow this new perspective of how we might just crack it open a little more. He says we should always start with an element that brings us joy, or anything in the natural world that brings us joy, and see where that would take us or lead us, to be able to just simply fall in love with the earth and with her creatures. Just let yourself fall in love, and then these natural ways of connecting, of creating ritual, will emerge from that. It can be tied to an everyday thing. It doesn't have to be every day. It could be aimed for once a week, or tied to the seasons or to the cycles of the moon. It could be once a year. It could be once a year when the hummingbirds return. So let's let the hummingbird be our guide just for a moment. Did you know that hummingbirds are only found in North America and South America? Yeah, some of you know. Only there. And here, some of the little hummingbirds we see are going to migrate up to 2,000 miles. Those tiny little red-throated hummingbirds that I love. 2,000 miles! That's amazing. Did you know there are over 350 kinds of hummingbirds? We get, what, two here in North America and where we live? There's 350. Did you know that hummingbirds can actually hover upside down? Because that sometimes they got to get that position to get the right in there for the flower. When I was in Ecuador, and I had a chance to see a lot of hummingbirds, they're as big as a robin, the ones I saw. There's some that are even bigger. But I'm like, ooh, what's that beautiful green bird? Well, that's a hummingbird. You could just hear it. It was just so cool. and so unknown to me, right? So how many of you feed hummingbirds at your house? Wow. I don't know if you could see, but it's like almost everybody feeds hummingbirds. All right, so you already have a connection to hummingbirds. Can you agree with me that? Hummingbirds, you love them, right? You love them. You could open your heart even a little more and love them even a little more by just noticing the things about them that bring you so much joy. First of all, they're really a gift of wonder. Like, they're the only bird that does this thing. It's amazing. And then there's the gift just of joy, of beauty, of how playful they are. And they're such hard workers. I love that about them, because I like to work hard. I love that they do that. And I love that they also have a wisdom of the plants. Like, they know which plants. Do you know a hummingbird will go to a flower and it'll know when it can come back to that flower when the pollen has re-emerged up to where they can get the nectar? So they know that. They're that smart that they can time out which flowers they're coming around to and when. So if you feed hummingbirds, and even if you don't, the way ritual works is we start to connect to that thing that draws us. So let's imagine if each spring, when you see that first hummingbird, you know how you go, oh, they're back, right? You do that, right? I do that all the time. Oh, there they are. That moment of absolute joy when they're back, what if you created a ritual around that? A ritual because you love hummingbirds. So when you see that first hummingbird, here's something you could try. You could step outside and hum. Hmm. 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 Just greeting the hummingbird. And then maybe you would walk around the feeder that you're going to fill and hum. And then as you fill that bird feeder, maybe you're just thanking the hummingbird for everything it gives you, every ounce of beauty, every moment of joy. You're just thanking it. Thank you for coming and being part of my life in this way. And then maybe you walk around your yard humming to all the plants and flowers that are just starting to emerge. I have no idea what the hummingbird is eating at my house at this moment. There's just not a lot. But to just bless all those plants that the hummingbird is going to be feasting from. And greeting that day with joy. And maybe every year you do this when the hummingbird arrives. Wouldn't that be lovely? Or maybe you're going to turn it into a community event, like a spring party. So you catch some of that joy of the hummingbird, maybe the first weekend of May every year. You invite your friends over, and you have a little ritual, a little welcome the hummingbird. I know some of you are frowning at me like, that's cuckoo. But, you know, hundreds of people gather each spring for something called the blessing of the bikes. That's awesome. But why not have a blessing of the hummingbirds? The blessing of what brings us joy. So you'd invite some people over, and instead of just doing it on your own, maybe, you know, you gather in a little circle outside around the hummingbird feeder, and everybody names what they love about the hummingbird. And they name how they want to bring, I'm going to take a little of that joy into my heart this season as the hummingbird's here. I'm going to take a little of that beauty and create it. And everybody gets to share that, and then maybe you'll hum a song. I would love that if people did that. And then maybe you'd bless the feeder and the flowers in the same way, and you'd do it together. And then maybe after that blessing, you sip some really sweet beverages, because that's what hummingbirds would love. Or maybe you create a hummingbird cocktail. Or there is such a thing as a hummingbird cake. Google it. It's a delicious recipe. Maybe everybody eats that. You see how simple it is? Are you catching my drift, right? It doesn't have to be a big thing. It's going to feel a little awkward when you invite people to a hummingbird party. But it's okay, because what it does is it creates space in these little hearts of ours to open, to breathe, to share, to connect. It would just be lovely. And if you have a hummingbird party, would you please invite me, please? I've never been to one, but as you can tell, I can design them. So the next lesson from the hummingbird. Did you know hummingbirds can also fly backwards? That is the only bird that can fly backwards. So with the hummingbird as our guide, we can fly backwards, right? We learn from the hummingbird. There are times where we need to fly backwards to the past, to try to explore those places in us that are so wounded or so stuck by old patterns or old religious rituals. For some of us, when something feels like that old pattern, it just reminds us of things we don't want. We tell ourselves, I don't want that. So for instance, if I were to ask you to join me in creating a little altar to honor the hummingbirds, if I were to ask you to join me in that, it's going to hook something in you about altars. Like, I don't want to be part of that because I used to have to come up to the altar and confess my sins. Or I used to have to, you know, we always came up to the altar for communion. Or whatever your, I'm not saying there's anything bad about those memories, but unless we start to unpack them, we'll never make an altar to the hummingbird. We fly back and we look at what's holding us up. Or if I were to say, would you gather with me and we're going to pray over the seeds I'm planting in my garden this afternoon? Well, I don't know if it'll be this afternoon. It might be tomorrow. But if I were to ask you to do that, what's it going to hook? It's going to hook stuff around prayer, right? Like, pray with you. Ugh. So unless we fly back and look at what's holding us up, we're just going to stay stuck up in the garage. Doggone it. We're not going to move into something else, something possible. So when we can explore and be aware of what gets hooked for us from our past, maybe then we can follow out into some other new way of doing it. Just don't get stuck in the garage, friends. Please don't get stuck in the garage. There's another way of expressing our spiritual joys. So how do we get to this other way? Well, back to Don Alberto Taxo. He says, start with whatever element in nature brings you the most joy. So the elements, earth, air, fire, water. Start with the one you love the most, and you just start to create these little habits of connection or awareness with it. So I'm going to just start with an example from my own life about the element of water, something I've really, really tried to make a connection with. My granddaughter and I, we love the beach. So we go down to the beach in the summer, spend hours there. Now, she just turned 10, and I gave her a little, for her birthday, I gave her a little a journal that has a unicorn on the front, and all kinds of fun pens and stamps, so that, you know, she loves to draw and write, right? And I thought, oh, perfect gift for my granddaughter. She opens it up, and she's so polite. She's like, the pen and the stamps are really cool, but I'm 10 now, and unicorns, Grandma. So I'm not sure if going to the beach with her grandma is going to hold the same charm it used to this year, but we'll see. It doesn't matter because we've had years of loving our time at the beach. So when we go, after we're done, and we're the beach near me, it has steep steps down to the beach from the parking lot. So at the end of the day, I gather our inner tubes. I get the backpack with all the snacks and waters and sunscreen, and I've got the pails of beach toys, and we climb back up those stairs. And always, 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 when we get to the top of the stairs, we stop, we turn to face the water, and we say, "Thank you, water. Thank you. We had so much fun today." And we each name the fun we had. We had fun in the sand. We had fun pretending we were mermaids in the water. We loved just eating our snacks, whatever it is. We say thank you. And of course, I'm laden down with things, so she always has to wave goodbye for us. "Thank you. We'll see you next time." And then we turn, get in the car, and then we go get ice cream, the next part of our ritual, which is as precious to me too. But you see how simple it is, right? It's building that simple connection, awareness, creating a little ritual that fits for you. And it might feel a little awkward to stand at the top of the stairs the first couple times, but after that, if you don't do it, you're gonna feel kind of bad, because it's now a way that your heart opens and expands. So how else might this work? Well, just really briefly, let me talk to you a bit about how I create ritual for myself too. So something I'm working on right now in my spiritual life is my aging and my body and what that means. And for me, that's a spiritual kind of exploration. So I'm trying to look at that, and I get a little stuck. I'm kind of up in the garage, humming around, you know, my body, it just doesn't do what I want it to do, and I just can't trust it, and I'm walking, and my knee gives out, and you know, some of you are young and saying, "That'll never happen to me." So I'm trying to be kind to my body, and what comes up as I'm working on it is 10 years ago, so I just turned 70. 10 years ago, when I turned 60, I was diagnosed with a really aggressive form of breast cancer. So you know how at those 10-year marks, sometimes things come back? So all of a sudden, I'm aware, oh, 70, 60. And when I went through all of the cancer things, there was a lot of distrust of my body, just a lot of struggle around, why is this happening? I thought I was healthy, blah, you know, all the things, right? And I also felt at 60 like I had to do this on my own, whatever that is, you know. I'll push through it, I'll get through it, all of that past stuff. So that's still all there, because I haven't really worked it out. So now, as I relook at it, I've got to zoom to the past, pull some of that in, and then figure out what to do with it. And I'm holding it in my hands like this, because this is what it feels like to me. I'm holding this kind of heavy part of my past. So how do I let go of that? How do I create a little ritual so that I'm not stuck anymore, stuck in this kind of unhappiness with my body flying up to the top of the garage? I don't want to be stuck. So my first job is to look at it, right? Really parse it out. Journal about it, think about it, talk to other people about it. Try to figure it out. And where I am with it at this moment, and again, this is in process, but I just thought it'd be interesting to see how my spiritual heart works. So here I am, ready to try to kind of keep sorting it out. And so I went and got out of my dresser drawer a headscarf that I used to use. I don't know why I've still kept it, but 10 years later, I still have one of the scarves that I wrapped my bare head in. And I found a little clay figure someone had given me during that time, and I found a tiny little dream catcher. And those things are sitting now on my altar, and I'm working with them every day, listening to them. And then I think, which element would help me release this? Because I'm so tired of flying up in the garage. So, you know, I think about each of the elements, and I think I've settled on air. You know, I could bury it. I could burn it. I could, take it to the water. But the thing that seems to fit is air. So what I'm going to do, I think, and we'll see, is to cut the scarf up into strips. And I'm going to kind of weave it into some kind of little nest basket. And then I'm going to put into that basket these little objects that represent for me the struggle. Then I'm going to get a ladder, and I'm going to climb up in a tree, and I'm going to put the nest up there. And I'm going to leave it. I'm going to let the air take it. I'm going to think of it as hatching something new for me. And then I know what will happen. I won't get stuck anymore with it, because I've ritualized it. I've let it go. And then if it does come back and I'm finding myself upset with my body, I can just come back and go look at the nest and take a deep breath and say, it's okay. You see how it works? It's not complicated. It's taking whatever's happening in our little precious souls and creating something to hold it, to name it. Don Alberto Taxo calls these habits of connection. When we can step out of whatever that awkwardness is or whatever that past is that holds us back and find this simple way. You don't need any special training to do this. No one does. You can just connect to an element and go from there. You can also connect, as we've tried this morning, to one of the animal world, if there's someone that draws you. I did bring Ted Andrews' book, Animals Speak, which if you're the kind of person that every time you're in the car, you see 10 hawks in trees, you might want to look up, what might that hawk, it's not like it's coming to necessarily give you a certain message, but there's some interesting things about hawks. Or if you are out hiking and a fox runs across your path, now that's an unusual thing. You might want to go check it out. What might fox mean? What might fox be inviting me to? It's an interesting way to interact with the world and to start to learn more, just as I tried to show you with the hummingbird today. There's so much hummingbird gives us that I turn to hummingbird often to remind me. So there's one last piece of advice from the hummingbird. The hummingbird gathers a little from here and a little from there, and it's enough. We don't have to put all of our ritual eggs in one basket, so to speak. It's okay to take this piece of something and this piece of something and this piece from our past, from our present, from what we wish, and it's enough. We don't have to worry that we're somehow abusing or misappropriating these cultural icons, because they've been shared with us so that we can grow, we can expand, we can become something more. As Don Alberto Taxo says, it's bit by bit, little by little, these acts of ritual change us, and bit by bit will change the world. Please explore.